This is the Integrate Intelligently podcast from Catatalk Software. A podcast about the people, programs, and processes that come together to make businesses successful. At Catatalk, we're a software integration company, but we believe this idea of intelligent integration goes much deeper than software.
Welcome back to another episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Frickler. Again, company today by founder and CEO of Catalog Software, Scott Frickler. Scott, today is another, for us, I would be think it would be interesting, but maybe not interesting for like our wives probably, but more for others. But I think for the audience that we have, this will be very valuable. Today, we're going to talk, maybe a little controversial for us to be talking about this, but choosing the right ERP for your manufacturing business. Spoiler alert, we're not going to recommend any ERP here on this conversation. So I've worked personally with, you know, a half a dozen to a dozen different ERPs and PLMs and different systems. We don't, Catalk, because we're an integration software in between, we don't recommend one versus the other. We work with many different ones. We're Switzerland here. We have a neutral stance, but we love to talk about them, right? We know we work with many different ones. We see every software, like every human, has its positives, its strengths and weaknesses, right? Things that it does really well and less things it does differently. So today's topic's really around like, what's the process or the framework for selecting an ERP or working with the ERP that you have? So I think, Scott, you're particularly, let's say skilled, but adept at talking about this, because before you built Catalk, you worked in the ERP world.
Yeah, before I worked at Catalk, I worked in CAM software for a company called Symetec that did nesting software. And then most of my job there was integrating their systems to ERP systems. So I got exposed to a bunch of those systems as well. And then I also worked for we started a ERP resellership years ago in the Infor space. And then, I did a lot of customizations around that, but I've also worked with lots of different partners around that. So I've been in the space, you know, for a long, long time. And then now being Switzerland, you see all the different kind of pros and cons of it. And really you get an idea of kind of like how people approach solving this problem for manufacturing companies. I mean, how do you approach it? Why different tools have their strengths and weaknesses? I mean, I have my opinions about why I think certain ones are better. And that very much comes from my kind of philosophy about tools in general, like how do you flexibility versus simplicity and things like that. But yeah, I'm really interested in the conversation today because I think it's a good one about not just about like which one's the best, but it's like which one's the best for you. You know,
that's a good point because ERP selection, someone selects the ERP, it's a little bit like new plumbing for your house or new furnishings, right? You have lots of stakeholders, lots of people involved who have an opinion about what they want, right? Everybody has something different that they want. Not every ERP does everything and every part amazing, right? Some ERPs really focus on certain aspects of ERP business than others, right? And typically, this is maybe a stereotype, but typically ERP purchases or ERP selections are run by CFOs. And so typically, you know, the accounting and the reporting and the ERPs is what they focus on the most because that's the type of people who buy that.
I love the furniture analogy because we're in the process, me and my wife are in the process of building a house right now. And you know this because we're custom home, which means it's like lots of choices, right? Lots of choices in the home. And then you realize like how different your styles and your preferences are.
That's fair.
And how little your opinion as the husband matters. But you're along for the ride, but it's cool because like if you're optimizing for the right thing, you know, you're optimizing for the happiness of the wife in the situation, whoever the picker is. So, which is what I'm doing in a lot of these decisions, but like, as we digress, but yeah, the choosing of an ERP is typically based on, like you mentioned, a CFO preference, because a lot of the thing driving kind of the ERP purchase is around visibility into the financials, visibility into the data. And by definition, if you go back to like what ERP is in one of our earlier episodes, it comes from MRP, which is material resource planning from like the 70s, right? And those systems, you know, traditionally were all about how do we figure out how to make things. And and how to do that. And how do we plan for the materials? How do we make purchase orders? How do we make job orders? How do we break down a design into a bill of material and then further into demand and supply and demand so we can supply, so we can get the job done. And then ERP came around, was stacking and accounting on top of that. And so we could actually get some visibility and saying, did I actually make money making this thing? You know, what did it cost me to make this thing? And all of those types of things. And that is really, really gets powerful because everything from soup to nuts is kind of tracked in transaction and then goes directly into GL accounts for accounting. So you get really cool reports and really good financials of like, how good is the company doing and how do we operate that? And being an engineer and building product and then working in a company from that perspective, and now being a CEO, which one of your primary jobs is making sure that we don't run out of money or making sure the money goes to the right places, you understand why that's a big driver. You know, it is. I mean, from a CFO, so it's not wrong for a CFO to optimize on that because it's like core and fundamental. But as you, with anything, if you choptimize on one thing, you usually compromise somewhere else. And that, so really, so that's usually where you see the differences in the different systems and why sometimes people will choose things and maybe optimize incorrectly or correctly, depending on their needs. One fundamental is that every business has to make money and be profitable. Otherwise, it's in the business for very long. So if you're going to optimize on something, I may give you a different answer 10 years ago, but now I understand better. Yeah, it's not a bad one to optimize on.
That's, yeah, yeah, but the book's not, right? The book's not, the money always not.
Yeah.
So another piece of wisdom you and I, we talked about it a little different when you talk about like what to optimize on. And I agree with that. I often think of it like trade-offs, right? Like everything's a trade-off, right? I can do more of this and do less of that, right? Everything's a trade-off. It's, you never get everything you want. I remember when I was a teacher, I made less money, or I knew I had a bit more time on my hands from if I get holidays off or I would get summers off. And I used to think like I had what in my mind at the time, this was maybe 20 years ago or yet 20 years ago, I used to think of like kind of the three-legged stool, like good, fast, and cheap, right? And there's everything's a trade-off. And so like, I was always wanting things to be good and cheap because like I was a teacher. I didn't have a lot of money. So that meant I used to do a lot of my work myself, work on my home myself, work on my car myself, do all this stuff. I knew I could do a good job. I knew I could do it cheap because like, you know, I would save on labor, but man, it was not fast, right? So it's all about those trade-offs. Like you select for a couple of things, the other parts kind of fall apart. To your point, the optimal. You say that these are the most important things in this three-legged stool. In this example, good, fast, and cheap is this three-legged stool. You're not going to get all three. Like you're only going to get two. So if you're going to focus for ERPs, it's the same way or any software, right? There are pros and cons.
You see that pattern like everywhere. I mean, it really is true. It's like, it's just a reality of life in a lot of ways. I mean, you're always trying to optimize all the areas, but it's just hard. I mean, and a lot of times they're conflicting. Like a decision you make here would be directly opposed to the decision you make over here. So like, it's very difficult to have all of them. And I think you even see this in like video games, right? When you play like adventure games and you're picking a character, it'll be like, they're strong, they're smart, or they're fat, right? And you know, so it's like, and then, you know, if they're really, really smart, they tend not to be very strong, you know, and if they're really, really fast, they tend not to be, you know, strong as either, but they tend to be, you know, you picking the characters, you're always trying to like, there's always, I always liked it because you would have like a little meters, right? It'd be like strong, smart, fast, you know, and if different levels, you know, it's like, and you're like, wow, I could be the smart one, you know, or whatever, you know, you choose that because you, but it's all an optimization because trying to be all three, all things, all people is a guaranteed way of being not appealing to anyone, you know? So a lot of times you're picking where you're standing, what you're, and that's why I use the optimization language, but yeah, it's a game of trade-offs. It's just like, what am I trying to be? You know, am I trying to be the most flexible or am I trying to be the most simple? You know, am I trying to be, you know, so there's all of those types of things that you're, because those are directly opposing. I mean, like in code, the fastest code typically is not the easiest to read code or the most complex is, and it works very, it has a lot more complexity to it. So like, so, and you can kind of thread in different optimizations in different areas, but it's always about, and that comes from my engineering background. Like engineering is literally a game of optimizations like that and trade-offs. Like, what am I willing to give up, you know, am I willing to give up more cost here to save on labor there? I mean, it's just all of that is about, you know, making that decision 1,000 times a day. you know, how you, and what make, what's the most important thing, and keeping your eye on what's the most important thing when you're as you're going along.
Yeah, this is a side story, but I reminds you what you said about when I was a teacher. I remember this kind of same similar thing, and maybe for a parent too. As a teacher, I remember thinking like, to at your point of optimization, it's like sometimes I was remember biking around going, should I correct this behavior here? Should I, you know, or should I let that go? Or, you know, you're always like trying to make the decision a thousand times. That when you talked about making lots of decisions as an engineer, which does make sense because you have to optimize. I was going back to my teaching days thinking, man, I made a lot of decisions every day in that job. And to your point, you just have to make those, like, if I say yes to this, it's going to cause me a problem downstream, or if I, you know, whatever that is. So no, it's important that that's everywhere, right? It's in every kind of part of life, is this optimization. So getting back on that idea of optimizations, right? What are some like things, I guess, or areas that people should think about when they're looking at their manufacturing requirements, right? What are the things they should consider as in terms of, you know, manufacturing styles, what industry they're in, right? How big they are, like, what matters for the company looking at that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with like the problem that you're, how your business is kind of set up, right? Like if you're looking into me, you know, I think about just, you could apply this anytime when you're looking at software. I think we've talked about software selection in the past, but like the principles that you go for, but like, what are things that you have to do with your business, the way it works, that is kind of, you know, that this software could possibly serve, right? So in the case of like engineer to order, you might say, well, I really need a fast ECN process because I'm going to make a lot of changes, right? I need a fast process for that. So you might say, I need to look around that. And then for like, you know, for an engineer or for a, you know, a make to order, I'm going to need, you know, really, really efficient, you know, inventory capabilities and really advanced capabilities. You might, there's things like that you might need that makes more sense. So you have to look around, like what do you have, like, what are you doing every day to where you're really going to get like the time savings and the insight and stuff that you really need based on your particular solution. So going back to the idea of like the CFO optimized or the accounting optimized, like what's really interesting is that people don't realize like QuickBooks, one of the most popular business systems in the world, accounting systems, right? So QuickBooks, you could run QuickBooks for a manufacturing company. You say it's basically the lowest tier ERP, like an ERP. Three tiers, right? There's tier one, tier two, and tier three. Tier one, like SAP, Oracle. Tier two is like your Sightline, SysPros, things like that. And then people kind of fall in that spectrum. And tier ones are like, or sorry, tier threes are like, you know, like your E2, QuickBooks, things like that. So they're like your entry level type of ERP or, you know, accounting systems and things like that. So what the irony that people don't realize is like doing an invoice in QuickBooks is like infinitely faster than doing an invoice in SAP, which seems completely counterintuitive, right? You're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, it probably take you a lot longer to do an invoice in SAP. And it's actually going to take more labor, people and stuff to actually operate a company with SAP than it will to operate a company with QuickBooks. And everybody's like, so I pay 1,000 times more for it to be harder. Yes. And like, why would anybody do that? Right. Because it has more flexibility. It solves more problems so SAP, in order to make, QuickBooks, in order to make invoicing really, really easy, simplifies it to the bare bones. Here's how you create an invoice, and it just sends it. This much money, pay me on this day, you know, whatever. That's what it does, right? And you can create that almost as easy as you can create it in Word. Okay. And still tied to some kind of transactions and be able to create reports from it and everything else, which is really a benefit. What happens if you want to do progress billing or you want to do project-based billing and you want to have really fancy terms and you want to pay from ACH, you want to pay, like all of these different things that you want to do that like an actual business is doing global manufacturing in 50,000 countries and has to pay taxes and all this kind of stuff that has to happen. QuickBooks is going to have trouble with that. So therefore the complexity has gone up. The problem is different. But at the end of the day, you're still creating an invoice. But that an understanding that is paramount, right? So if you're like, okay, well, yeah, that makes sense. Now I've got to pay more to get this flexibility in the product. But with flexibility, as the flexibility goes up, complexity goes up. and it's hard to learn. Takes more overhead to do it all the way down the line. So that's one of those optimization problems that you're dealing with. So that's why there's different systems being available to the market, because everyone has there are different spots on that pyramid of like, on those decisions of like, do I want something easy? Do I want something flexible? Do I need something that does a lot of things that are weird? You know, like all these, like what you're optimizing for. And then that's why all these different solutions kind of target different people at different stages or different businesses. Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's super helpful. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's, you have to look at like what it is, jobs to be done. What do you need, right? Like, because a company that is a manufacturing company that, you know, is, for example, you know, 25 or 30 million is different from one that's 300 million. That's different from another one that's 3 billion, right? Because operating in one country or even one state or just one region is different from one who's working globally, plants and China and Europe and, you know, just across the globe, but the different companies, right, with different needs. And so as a result, you have to select one. So that gives some idea that like ERPs are probably different sizes too, right? Like how big the package based upon kind of how big the company is, I would think.
Yeah, there's definitely a correlation there. I mean, I think it like there's a big correlation between, because with size comes complexity. That's usually why you have to get bigger packages. Now there could be just the complexity of the business, you know, could also drive that as well. So sometimes you'll see people that are much smaller than you think they would be, and they're in systems that are much more expensive because, you know, and vice versa. Yeah. I've seen $1 billion companies running just barely still on spreadsheets. And I've seen, you know, $10 million companies running some very expensive, almost cost them as much as their yearly revenue in the Biden system. And so it's like I would say there's probably an issue with that, but you see some huge disparities like that. But it just depends, like, once again, what they're placing the value and where they think that they can get that leverage. Cause everything, you know, it's all about, where can I get the leverage? Like, you're buying a tool to get leverage and to give you something that you couldn't get without it. Right. So what is the leverage you have with the ERP? Well, it automates a lot of functions that would traditionally be manual. It also gives me visibility into data. And it facilitates communication. And so and I always use this example of like, if you're working your garage and you're building bicycles and it's just you, it'd be ridiculous to have anything more than maybe QuickBooks to send invoices. Because you don't need advanced inventory control and warehousing and purchase orders. I mean, you're literally buying on Amazon, you're having it shipped, you're receiving the thing from the UPS guy, and you're literally putting the gear on the bike as soon as you get it. It's really simple, right? But when you scale operations and you're building 1,000 bikes or 1,000,000 bikes a year, you can't do it like you did it in your garage. And there's more people, and there's people need to be communicated with, and they have to know what's going on, and they have to see, you know, when's this bike, you know, when's the, you know, the millionth and second bike due? Where's it supposed to go? How's it going to get there? Do we have to pay taxes on it? Where the local, like, you know, we're the local, the region that we're selling, they have this crazy bike law where you have to put this weird fin on there so it cuts down on wind resistance or whatever the crazy thing is that they want to do. All that complexity needs to be managed. And that's where leverage comes in with the software. And you have to know where your complexity is to match the software to your solution. And what happens is a lot of times, like you say, with the accounting department choosing it, like I noticed this from running our company, is that we get surveys about like what we should work on next quarter. We do this like quarterly rocks thing. And I'll get the surveys and it'd just be huge disparity. What people think is the most important thing, because they are living in their world of their area. Right. And the same thing happens in manufacturing companies. You have like, I'm in engineering. I'm like, the worst problem in the world is that engineers can't get the parts out on time or whatever it is. Right. And then if I'm in the machine shop, the worst problem in the world is that our machines are always down. And if I'm in accounting, it's like, we can't get good data. And if I'm in purchasing, we just can't get these vendors to give me good pricing. I mean, it's like everybody will talk about whatever is in their world as being the most important thing. And then as a leader, the CEO or in a company, you're kind of looking at all of that and saying, yeah, I this is all the information. And then I'm kind of shaking that off and go, it looks like we're just missing documentation. Where the hell did that come from? Right? Or we're missing like a common thread through the process to kind of know what's happening. I think I need a system for them. You see what I'm saying? And then so that kind of, that you're trying to drive to that. And then, and if, if like one of the departments says they want to do something, they might drive, like they said, the accounting department, they're going to say, I just need really good data. So everything that they're going to get enough information, they're going to look at the packages and they're going to pick the ones that look the best for their problem. And then they're going to say, will it cover the basis for everybody else? And we actually see this sometimes. I see people pick the wrong ERPs and it's obvious.
Oh yeah, I've seen that too.
It's like,
oh, I've seen that.
You're like, whoa, you know, what did you do here? Like, you know, you're engineered order and you bought like something that like, it's just like unbelievably hard to do, you know, whatever, you know, those types of things. Like they didn't have job tracking, like the system wouldn't have job tracking. Like, you know, and then or only could do like standard costing and you're making engineered order and you're like, what? And just because that was the wrong department got a hold of it, not from any, like, not because they're just foolish, they don't know what they're talking about, is that they're in their own world, right? And they're optimizing on their own problems. And there's like, not to go off on a tangent, but like when I was in nesting, this is an interesting kind of side note. It's like, I learned this concept is a series of good decisions can lead to a very bad outcome. Because when you're laying parts down on a sheet, you might, like the way the algorithms would work, it would lay a part down and try to optimize the yield of that part. And they would lay another part down, optimize the yield. And then that by doing that slightly off to optimize for yield, it created a pattern that was hard to fit and it made the whole thing really inefficient. So when you actually had to do those algorithms and figure that out, you actually had to do forward thinking. You had to say, well, how, not just how efficient is the best position to put this part, how efficient is to put this part two more down after it, called a look ahead factor. That look ahead factor allowed them to look at the thing and more in as a complete picture and make a better decision. So the same thing happens, you know, with software selection, things like that. Hopefully that wasn't too heady, but that's kind of the way I think about these things.
You know? That's valuable. I mean, I think the key that I took out of that was that look ahead factor, which is, to your point, everybody's kind of is focused on what they're doing, right? I'm focused on this, trying to achieve this thing. But you need that look ahead, right? That human look ahead. Look over there. What don't you see that is so important? And that's why I think in a lot of those ERP selections, I've been a part of those because CAD Talk is usually a topic in those conversations, right? Somebody is manufacturer is looking in the ERP, and one of the questions that come up is, hey, how do I integrate my PDM or my PLM or whatever? How do I integrate that? And then somebody says, oh, we use CAD Talk for that. And so I have my, in the past, right? I had my role of like coming and say, hey, this is how it works, right? This is what we do. This is how it's science, save your time and all of the value, right? Save your time, prove your data, accelerates your, you know, the handoff, all of that stuff. But you got to make sure that, you know, everybody's involved in that, right? And then the challenge there is taking all those look aheads, right? Because everybody's sort of saying, I need this and I need this and I need this. And you got to sort of coalesce that into some sort of decision like this one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think like another way to approach it would be, because a lot of times you don't, like, people also realize that like the constraints and the optimizations they're making for today aren't the constraints and the optimizations they would make for tomorrow, but they have to live with the system for a long time. This is another one. It's like, people are always like, well, people always criticize, coders do this all the time. Everybody else's code is crap. My code is great, right?
Ryan, like, because nothing's harder. This is like anything else, right? Every house decorator, right? We bat a new house through the flight. Who decorated those? This is horrible.
This is horrible, right? And then, like, and then code, you always got to worry about the great rewrite because I'm going to rewrite it all and it's going to be perfect. And it's like, that's not the way it is. And like, and then when you do the great rewrite, you realize like the code is ugly because they were trying to fix all the little bugs that they got recreated when you did it again, right? It's just like you're relearning the same lessons. And it's a common thing because, and then you're also judging it under current conditions. Like at the time, the decisions were made based off the current technology, the current economic conditions, the current state of the business. All of these things were paramount at that time, okay? And then unless you really document like why you made the decision, you don't really remember. You just know that you had this thing you're using, right? So but if you remember like, well, we made that decision because at this time, you know, we didn't have AI didn't exist or this technology didn't exist or something like that. That's why we did that. And then if you relax that constraint, you may have made a different decision. But you're like, but man, I spent, you know, I have this sunk cost fallacy. I spent millions of dollars buying the system and getting a new system can be extremely expensive. So like, what are you going to do in that situation? Even knowing that maybe it is the best system today that it was yesterday is still could be cost prohibitive. So I guess my experience in this is probably where I would give more guidance than I typically would normally, but I tend to optimize for the problem that I have, but I probably optimize even more for flexibility and the ability to change the system to my needs for the time. So that's why I've always liked, and that's the same way we build Cat Talk, is configurability and flexibility, because I want optionality in the future, which optionality is a fancy word for saying, I like to have a lot, I don't even know what I'm going to want tomorrow. I just want the option to be able to choose it because I don't want to paint myself in a corner or whatever analogy you want to use. So that's why I tend to like systems that can be customized or modified or that have flexibility in them. That's what I like. And that actually for a long time in the ERP space was a bad word. Like customization, they actually used to change the marketing. They used to call it personalization just because customization got such a bad rap. And actually, oh, it's horrible. Like people, and it's actually wrong. I think it's wrongheaded. This is my opinion. This is where the opinion comes in. But like the reason why I think it's wrong is because the what got a bad rap was is that people would highly customize ERPs. They would actually get the source code and change the source code of the ERP and all this kind of stuff. And then they would try to upgrade. This is back when they had a lot of on-premise systems. And then there would be this basically a complete rebuy and re-implementation to upgrade to the latest thing. And it was so painful and so bad that people just got so burnt. And then there was this whole culture of like, we don't customize anything. Like most of the benefit of a system is
tweaking customization.
It's tweaking it down to your process, to your special sauce and making it work and getting it where you need to be and squeezing that juice out of it. The problem isn't that you customize. The problem is just as an upgrade. So I remember doing a talk like years ago, like actually at an Infor conference about how do you customize your ERP and still upgrade? Because that's actually the problem you're trying to solve. And if you could do that, then you get all the benefits. Like you get the ability to customize it and you're limiting the downside. There's always a downside of customization, which is maybe maintainability, but you're limiting it. You're allowing it to upgrade. And there's strategies and techniques to allow that. And the modern technology allows you to do that, you know? And so we're taking advantage. So you're really getting to the right problem. So I tend to look at systems like the first thing I'll ask when I'm shopping for a system is like, well, do you handle this kind of weird problem that I have? Do you have an API? And how much can I customize with the way it works and still upgrade? And if I know that, then I choose the solution. And then I know I can pivot in the future when my needs change slightly. That's typically the way I approach it.
Yeah, that also leads understandable why Cat Talk works the way it is, right? Because Cat Talk is that configurable and then infinitely upgradable. So you can keep upgrading Cat Talk, right? New features, new benefits. But that personalization, configuration, customization, whatever word we want to use around it to make it work for your process, a company's process, that makes it upgradable. You made it such that you optimize this Cat Talk as a product on options, right? Giving people options to make it flexible so that in the future it wouldn't break, right?
I mean, I was listening to a podcast, I think it was Hermosi this morning on my drive. I think he's like, that was a really interesting point. He says people in business, they think that like there'd be a day they have no problems, you know, like as if that's actually a thing, right? And it's like, you know, if you talk about being supply constrained or demand constrained, like say you have a service business, right? And you have people sitting around waiting to do work. You're demand constrained. You don't have enough people wanting to do the work. You don't have enough people who want your services, right? So you go out and you do marketing, you do sales, you do all this crazy stuff. Now what happens? You're supply constrained. You don't have enough consultants to service the labor. So now you got a new problem to solve. And you got to go figure out how you got to do it. Strangely, it's actually the same solution. You do promotion, you hire employees versus trying to hire customers. But the idea is that your problem changed. Your business is still this business. You still do the same thing, but the problem changed. And this kind of the problem changing every six, if you're doing well, problem is changing quite often. So if you know the problem is changing, the problem that you have today will evolve to another problem tomorrow. How much are you going to optimize on your problem today? And you don't know what the problem tomorrow is going to be. You can maybe predict it a step or two down the line, but you don't really know. So what do you optimize for? Flexibility. You have optimized for the ability to change, to have options or optionality in the future.
Yeah, that's right. You optimize on the flexibility to do what you need to do. That makes sense. So from an ERP perspective, right, in your mind, it was just, it's you would buy, one of the things you would want to know is like, hey, how easy is it to personalize, customize this thing, and how easy is it to upgrade those things? Because I don't know what my business is going to be like in the future. And you're right. People often think, even manufacturing companies think, oh, it's not going to change. This isn't going to change.
Well, I mean, there's some things that are fundamental. Like you could say that, like, I want to make sure it covers the bases and the things that I know will never change.
Oh, yeah. There's something basic, what they call that, boilerplate, right? Certain things that like are foundational, right? Like,
well, it's like what Bezos said that in his one of his early letters, like he likes building businesses on things that'll never change. There's never a world in the future where people are going to want their goods more expensive and slower.
Right, yeah.
Never going to happen. That's a pretty safe assumption. You know, it's like
safe assumption. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, until we figure out how to, you know, create a antimatter replicator like there is in Star Trek, we're still cutting metal or making parts. I mean, it's like those things are going to happen, or printing things now with 3D printing. But like, we're building things up, you know, we're still making things, you know, at this point, you know, and in factories and their supply chain, and there's all these different things you got to deal with. Those things won't go away. So you can think about what in your business is likely not going to change, and make sure that the solution covers those really well. And there's uniqueness in your business on that. And then you got to think about how do I build enough flexibility to deal with the things that are going to change.
Yeah. So that would be like for like manufacturing, right? You say it in the context of us, like, well, you're always going to have parts, right? And part numbers. You're going to have bills of material. They're going to be structure, right? They're going to be parent-child relationships. They're going to be quantity. You're going to make this part or you're going to buy this part, right? There are certain fundamentals that are always going to be there. But things like, well, I might buy it today. I might make it tomorrow. I might make out of this material today, out of that material tomorrow. I might put it on this machine today and that machine tomorrow. I might build it at this site today and the other site tomorrow. You just don't know. And all of those things matter. In fact, I know one of our customers was that very thing. They had a, I don't think this was a result of the tariffs, because they had the process they had been doing for a while, but they had a plant in China, and I don't know if they moved the plant to Mexico or they decided to stand up a plant in Mexico. Either way, they had a plant in Mexico. And so they needed to adapt their integration to handle the fact that they now have that manufacturing facility in Mexico, which was not there before.
Yeah.
So they had to adapt, right? They had to adapt, and they had to adapt quickly because their business is fast. What they make, and they need to make that change quickly to adapt to a brand new facility. And so, you know, Cat Talk, with that flexibility, as you said, is able to handle that. So there, to your point, those assumptions that things start, they still have bombs, right? Bills of material, they still have parts and all that, but like where they made that changed.
Yeah. And that, you know, because the macroeconomics change, the technology changes, these things all change. And there will be a point, like even when things that are, like I said, that you think are completely immovable, they're just immovable for a longer period of time. That doesn't mean that they're not immovable. I mean, that, like, I make jokes about the, you know, antimatter replication machine, but you know, there will probably be a time in the future, sometime in the future, where that actually does exist, but at least not in the near future, you know, you know, that type of thing, right? You know, just like, I mean, because people would talk about like, well, that's a good too far type. Like fusion was considered a dream years ago. Now they're doing it, right? So it's like that's a
oh yeah.
So you're very, what's that
for power generation?
Yeah, for power, right? So it's like yeah. So it's like people, you know, you gotta sometimes sacred cows are not, you know, aren't sacred. You know, so it's like you guys gotta keep an eye on that. But you know, so you can't predict everything in the future, but you try to hedge, you know, and try to like it's a increase optionality, you know, so you can adjust because the change is inevitable. That part isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, it's interesting that, what do you think, this might kind of off topic, but what do you think, like you said, everybody makes choices and trade-offs. What do you think led to your focus on optionality, your focus on flexibility? What do you think, what motivated you to choose that, right? Because you could have chosen lots of different things. Simplicity, lots of different things.
And then I guess the point is all of these things can work, right? They're all geared towards certain markets. They're all geared towards, like, I mean, you think about like the classic example of this is like Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, right? With Apple, right? And the original Apple was built mostly by Woz, right? Woz is like, he was an engineer guy, kind of like me, right? He loved options and he built it for hobbyists and he wanted it to be able to have all these ports on it so you could plug your peripherals and you could do your hobbyist stuff and, you know, all this kind of, you know, stuff. Like, it was, yeah. He just had it like, was just built like it was, you know, a Rube Goldberg machine type of thing. It just could do all kinds of stuff. And then Jobs came in with the Mac and he just wanted like ultra simplicity. He didn't even have like a port on it. It was like he couldn't do like a lot of the things. And then you're like, if you're an engineer type like me, you look at that, you go, it's just ridiculous. Like, why would you do what Jobs did? Because like you're looming, you're taking away all these options. But the problem is that you have Steve Jobs was trying to appeal to the masses. He's trying to appeal to make mass appeal for something. He wanted a billion dollar, not million dollar market. He was trying to, and if you're trying to go to a mass market, simplicity works. People just want to buy the thing and it works. Even me, like people are like, Scott, you know, why don't you have an Android phone? You have an iPhone. Why would you have an iPhone? The Android phone can do more. Because I just want the phone to work. Like I deal with stuff all the time. You know, I have my own complexity I got to deal with. I don't really want the complexity with my phone, right? So I appreciate the simplicity kind of mantra of like sometimes you just want things to work and be simple. And that if you're trying to appeal to mass market, that's a great way to do it. The reason I go that direction is because I tend to be more technical. And I could see more paths to success. And I like having multiple paths to success. And I think a lot of really good entrepreneurs and a lot of people who, you know, engineers as well, you think in like, how do you describe that? You think in like multiple paths. Like you say, I'm trying to get to here. And if that doesn't work, then I'll go this way. If that doesn't work, I'll go that way. If this doesn't work, I'll do this. And like, you're thinking about like all the eventualities and you like having the ability to like pivot and delay the decision until you have, and so you can make the best one. And, but that increases complexity. There's no denying it. You increase complexity and if you deal with that complexity, then you tend to like things that are more flexible. If you don't like complexity, then you don't go towards those things. And it could be context specific, like me with the cell phone. I don't care about flexibility. Yeah, does that make sense? Because I just want it to work. So that's usually where it comes from.
With that being said, you can mitigate complexity, right? There are ways in which that you can turn something that is flexible into simple.
Sure. I mean, that's how you, and then what you do there is a template. I think I'll steal from Dan Martell, which is it's something called stencils. So like if you were to like painting a wall and you wanted to put these like really cool birds on the wall, right? And you're like trying to, and you could hand paint every bird, or you could draw a bird once and cut that paper out and create a stencil. And then it's like, then you spray paint and you can create birds on the wall like crazy. You have the complexity of the bird design, but now you figured out how to do that. Cause you could apply what they call as a stencil to a process, to a complex process. So the way that we do it is to kind of get the best of both worlds is that you create a stencil for like a best practice or a set of configuration that makes sense for a common situation stencil. And then you say, but I could pull that stencil away at any time and then get down under the hood and make changes. And that's kind of like, you try to do that. That's where you're trying to get the best of both worlds by doing that.
Right. What I call templates, right? Kind of template configurations or, exactly right. Something like stencils is a good same idea that you can create. You can take that complexity, that flexibility, and kind of hem it in a little bit. And then if you need to veer off that, you can, but only where needed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like essentially kind of like a lot of franchises create stencils or templates around things in order to, because some people just want, they don't necessarily want flexibility, but they want consistency, right? So like, you know, it was the whole McDonald's versus Burger King, you know, like Burger King was, you know, make it your way or whatever it was. And they're trying, but like McDonald's is like, you knew no matter what McDonald's you go to in the world, it's going to be the okay, mediocre burger every single time. Fries are going to be good. All right. But you get the similar experience, but because they're simplifying to reduce complexity for scale. And so there's like, once again, it's this optimization problem. You know, what are you optimizing for?
So Scott, before we wrap up, like what, let's leave the listeners with some, if they're looking at an ERP, let's give them some like tactical advice that they can use for making the selections, right? Maybe framework to think about. What are some, you know, one or two, maybe three things that we could say, hey, make sure, you know, look for this or that, or especially once they select it and then they get to implementing it. You know, you've done lots of ERP implementations and implemented integrations with ERPs and modified them, and you've done all that. What can we recommend to the listeners, you know, this journey of, like, you know, purchasing, looking at ERP, implementing it, and then, you know, looking back and go, was this a success?
Well, I'd say I do it differently today. The tools are better. How to aggregate knowledge and insights is a lot better. What I would do today, really tactical, we kind of do this a little bit internally too, is that I would go and I would survey everyone internally and say, you know, just like we did with like the Coley goals, and say, what do you think the biggest problem and constraint you have in your area that you know about? Because that, like I talked about earlier, that was one of the problems that people optimize on that. And then take all of that data, and then I would load it into ChatGPT, and I would say, what are the themes here? And then have it tell me what the themes are, and then say, and what I look for is like, what move can I do that will cover most of those bases? So I think it was, as a CEO, you're looking for like leverage. You're like, let me solve 10 problems. We do one thing that solves 10 problems, not 10 things that solve one problem, right? So, and then kind of in working with the AI to get to where it would essentially let me aggregate those, and then put my insights into it, and then have it like stack rank all that stuff into a feature list, and then have it do deep research to figure out like which one of those things, how typically they're solved, and then kind of what it knows about solutions that are out there that would match up with that. So I would use the AI to help me make the decision today. That's how I would do it. That's as tactical as I can get it. Like, that's how I would.
That is tactical. No, that's great. Yeah, that's really tactical, is to say, you know, gather the one or two biggest problems in each department, put that into the context window, right? Give as much background as you can, and to start chatting with it. And because it has the, like you said, deep research with the types of solutions that are out there, telling all about what you, the kind of company you are, what you do, all of that. And it will I'm confident that it'll give you three or four solid, strong options and arguments for each one.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally you'd have to go to a software selection firm, which is also still valuable, because like, I'm a big fan of AI, but also, people and having nuance for your business is a huge thing. So the consulting software selection is not going anywhere. You're just going to get more nuance with it. So what you're wanting to do is like, it's like doing your homework before you even get to the consultant, right? You're saying, hey, you're so much more prepared when you get there. So like, I still would recommend it, because, you know, and we work with a lot of them, you know, they recommend us and stuff like that too. But now you're honing your thinking, and you know what to ask for. And you're like, here's the three or four things I think that are really important to us. And, you know, and things like, so yeah, I was everything these days. I started with AI, you know, start with that, and it helps you, and it helps kind of co-create with it. And it can do the research and things for you, especially with like deep research and other features that really hone in on like, and bring ideas to you. And you're like, a lot of times you're just like, you know what, I'm seeing a theme here. You know, I think one of them we had a couple quarters ago was actually the conclusion was we needed to do documentation. We needed to have better internal documentation. So we actually made the theme of the quarter, like, you're creating playbooks, like creating all the documentation around what we do, because, you know, and how did you know that? It was like, well, people were talking about completely different problems. They're talking about like, oh, we're having trouble with people not understanding this, and we're having trouble with the customer doesn't understand how the process works. They don't understand this. You know, like all these things, which look like completely different problems, but it really is because there wasn't a unified process or a playbook. Like, this is how we do it, and this is where we go to get that information. This is where we go to document it. And then we spent like an entire quarter just creating those playbooks, and then all those problems got better. So you're looking for that high leverage move, right? Like, what's that thing? So the same thing with the tools, when you're saying, well, I'm hearing all these problems that we're having in these different areas. And, you know, and as a leader, you can also have your kind of an insight from that, but AI and some of those things, deep research, can help bring those forward to you. So you see the patterns more.
That was good technical advice. I was not thinking you were going to say that. So that was super. I should have. After you said it, I should have known. You'd be like, oh, put that in AI, put it in the chat. I should have known. Yeah, that's great. No, that's good, Scott. So This was a good conversation. I really appreciate the taking the time. So I would recommend for some of you who are going through, if you're going through ERP selection, or you're looking, obviously you want to find a neutral resource, I would encourage you to go to our website, catflark.com, to our blog, where we have lots of articles about integrations, about ERPs, about processes, and there's some valuable information there that you can read up on as you're going through this process of you're considering ERP, or you're just trying to improve your business, right? Like, or your current business with challenges. Lots of good, Scott, you could even take some of that data, some of those articles, and put that in your context.
Yeah.
And it's, you know.
Yeah, probably been indexed already too, though. So.
Probably, that's right. Probably been indexed already. No, that's a good point. Okay, Scott, before we sign off, anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think it's a cool topic to talk about. Like, you know, this I mean, we talk about it a little bit more high level than people, you know, you try to get back to tactical things, but I think the approach and, you know, the overarching idea is just like really getting a handle on what things aren't going to change, what things are going to change
and could change.
And then balancing that optimization problem, you know, what is it and identifying what you should optimize for is probably the hardest thing.
Well, another episode in the book, Scott. We'll talk to you next week. I think you're traveling this week, so enjoy that traveling. And we'll see you next time, next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CADtalk Software. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss future episodes. Video versions of the podcast will be available on CADtalk's YouTube page, linked in the show notes. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is hosted by CADtalk CEO Scott Brickler and CRO Jeff Brickler. Our producer is myself, marketing manager John Thomas. If you have a story you want to share on the podcast or you want to partner with us, let us know. Email marketing@CADtalk.com and be sure to mention podcast in the subject line.